Get ready to listen, learn, and earn CE hours. This podcast features content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits.
Hello, good day to you, and thank you for joining us today for this podcast. I am Maria Morales with Calibri Healthcare. Our goal for this podcast is to discuss something high tech today. At least it's high tech for me. We want to be educated by an expert on the intersection of nursing and artificial intelligence. How does and will artificial intelligence influence nursing and healthcare in general? During the podcast episodes, we will discuss terms used when talking about AI, a little history related to the evolving of AI in healthcare, algorithms, and some clinical applications of AI technology. I am joined by two nurses today. The first is an informatics nursing expert, Dr. Susan McBride. She is Associate Dean of Research at the University of Texas at Tyler. She was previously a professor and program director of informatics at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Let me tell you some more about Dr. McBride. She has her PhD in nursing with a clinical background as a clinical nurse specialist. She is certified as a Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society Certified Professional and Healthcare Information and Management Systems. Those credentials which she holds, which you will see in various published material, are the HIMSS. That's usually called HIMSS, right, Dr. McBride?
That's correct.
All right, and CPHIMS. And she is a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing. She is well-published and an experienced speaker with over 20 years of experience in informatics and as an educator for statistics and epidemiology. We can learn a lot from her ability to describe complex material in understandable language. And we have the privilege of having a second presenter here today, Kirk Ornstein. He is a master's prepared registered nurse and clinical nurse leader. He has some varied and interesting nursing experience from private duty, medical ICU step down to pediatric nursing, even including camp nursing and school nursing. He has even been doing some contract tracer work within the specialty of pediatrics during the pandemic. He has some experience with AI and insulin pumps that he wants to tell us about today to give us a clinical picture of things to consider as we keep in mind the benefits and concerns for AI and other technologies in healthcare today. Okay, so let's see if our experts today have any other information to add about themselves. So Dr. McBride, are there any other interests that you would like to tell us about yourself related to this topic, or nursing in general, or even education? I know that you do have a motivation to improve patient safety, increase quality in healthcare, and help both urban and rural populations with regard to health policy. So a lot going on there for you.
It is. My passion is all about the data and the information and what it can do to help us with patient safety, quality, and the health of populations. It's all about that for me. And that's really what led me into the field of informatics. I was a perioperative nurse by clinical background many years ago. And what I see about technology and the data and information is that when we mature it in a certain way, it helps us do our jobs better as clinicians. And that is what it's all about for me. So regardless of what technology or analytic methods we have in place, if the technology and the information don't help us improve things, then we should reconsider its use. And that's also led me down the road of a lot of the research that I'm doing now. We have implemented electronic health records within the last decade very rapidly. And so electronic health records has created lots of opportunities for improvement and better research to inform what we're doing with these electronic health records. So now that is my focus, is how do we mature the data out of the back ends of these systems so that we can use it for patient safety, quality, and population health, as well as how do we prepare clinicians to use these systems effectively. And Advanced analytics is a passion of mine. The more data we get, the more these methods that we're going to be talking about today are so important to us. So that's a little bit more about me.
Okay, great. And back to Kirk, is there anything you would like to tell us about yourself in addition to what was said before? Something interesting, it seems your life has moved you from an interest in political science early on to an emergency / pediatric nursing kind of focus. But it seems you've also done a bit of content writing in healthcare. So tell us some more about how you pursued your nursing track and the things you've done.
Yes, I've done a lot of things. One of the things I think that I've enjoyed most has been in my previous life, a science writer, really doing a lot of generating information for the physicians, doctors, people, bringing the data that Susan is generating and presenting it to just sort of the community at large, my patients, trying to help them understand all the information that is out there now. And I think that sort of caring for others is sort of what's driven me towards nursing to the place I am now.
And how did you move initially from kind of a political science track to over to medicine and healthcare?
Well, the politics took me to Washington, and Washington was a, there are words that I can't use, but Washington was a mess. And, you know, the idea of that generating information or generating action to help people wasn't the place where I was going to do that. And so it became much more of a change towards sort of the local environment, local community, you know, helping your neighbor. And that's what nursing's about. A lot of different ways you can go in nursing. And for me, it was very much about the community. And that's sort of why I've drifted towards the school nurse, camp nurse. It's all about, you know, helping those communities in a way that's has that local approach. And so that's sort of where I was heading, and I think that's where I'm feeling good about right now.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Thank you again to both of you for taking the time to educate us today as we talk about some techie topics. So let's talk technology and look at how it helps while being mindful of how we need to be careful with the technology too. So here's a fundamental question for our chat today. What is a basic description of artificial intelligence?
So artificial intelligence in simple terms is the ability of computers to learn human-like functions or tasks. So they attempt to replicate human cognition, hence the term artificial, meaning computer-based, and intelligence related to human cognition or cognitive ability of the computers.
Okay, I follow that. That makes a lot of sense. Is there any history behind artificial intelligence that will help us better understand this evolving science?
Artificial intelligence dates back to the 1950s, so it's really not new. It's only recently that it has gotten sophisticated enough, and the tools have gotten sufficiently applicable to healthcare to where we've really begun to see it in healthcare. It started, honestly, with a series of if this, then this type statements. And so rules and algorithm type approaches is what we saw early on. And so I can give you an example of some work that I did back in the 90s with work that was similar to AI. And it helps to explain how it works. So I worked with a project back in the early 90s where we utilized fuzzy logic. And so what fuzzy logic is, it is essentially, in simple terms, a sounds-like engine. And so we had a problem we were trying to solve, and that problem was that people would be billed massive amounts of information out of hospitals with a detailed line item bill. And so payers and our insurance companies would get that information and really not know, along with the healthcare consumer, whether or not they'd been accurately billed for services provided. So that was the problem we were trying to solve. And what we did is we actually hired a bunch of smart nurses, and we started looking at patterns and consistencies in the detail level bills and essentially built a standardized charge master using fuzzy logic. And so the nurses would say, this looks like a catheter in the cath lab. This looks like IV solution of 1,000 cc's of saline. And after a period of about 4 years, we had a sounds like engine that automated the charge master match to up to 90%. And so the combination of this sounds like engine and nurses matching these things, yes, this looks like it matches, no, this doesn't. The machine got smarter and smarter with those matches to where over time it would automate the match with any line item bill that it had seen. And so that's an explanation a little bit of how AI machine learning looks in a very simplistic form.
Okay, and when you're talking about charges, let me ask a simple question just to make sure we understand this. So are you talking about keeping track of items that we would charge patients for, syringes, dressing supplies, et cetera, even if they're not individual charges, it might be a group? Or are you talking also things like consultations, room rates, surgery charges, interpreter charges?
Well, that's interesting. So at the time that we did this work in the 90s, a lot of those types of procedural things like surgical charges and all, there were already some standardized ways of looking at that because there was more standardized code sets around it. So data standards, in other words, and it was much simpler if you're doing a procedure in the operating room, for example, and your surgeon's bill for those services provided, that's like a several line items versus thousands of line items that are those syringes and gauze and everything at a line item level that comprises your total hospital bill at any given length of stay. And so I'll give you an example. We literally saw eras of entire cases of cardiac caths used. So one catheter would be, you know, $1,000. It was for a whole case of catheters, and it was a mistake. It was an error. But when you have something that is automated like that, it can detect error like that. And so just like AI machine learning, when it detects a pattern of what it should see and it sees something that's aberrant, like a case of catheters rather than one single catheter that should have been used, it will flag it. And so, yes, absolutely. Line items at the syringe or catheter level, it was that level. And you can see why automation of it, of running through thousands and thousands and thousands of charges are really important to do rather than having expensive nurses looking at a bill and saying, whoa, that looks like a case of catheters instead of one single catheter.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you said all that. So, in this case, it sounds like the technology was very helpful on both sides. It kind of makes me think, like, if I'm thinking about my smartphone or a tablet or something, I think about all the cool things it can do, make my life easier. But in real life, it's not always so seamless, or there's glitches, or even very simplistically, the battery dies. So, you know, what are some things on the other side to think about of how technology can help, but it can also, you still have to have humans involved to guarantee quality control?
Well, that's certainly true. And we are using mobile phones and a lot of the same types of technology that are our best friends with our mobile devices now are being used in the clinical setting, as I'm sure Kirk's going to tell us a little bit about that. But from an AI standpoint, it's being used in many ways. And we encounter it in our personal lives. Even we see Tesla and the, you know, the smart cars that are out there that are self-driving cars, which are kind of scary to contemplate. Well, it's scary to contemplate in healthcare too, right, Kirk? Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about how they actually work. Algorithms are derived from artificial intelligence and often are combined with machine learning capabilities, and that puts additional knowledge and expertise into the system. So some of the common encounters that nurses are seeing now are within our electronic health records. We have what we call clinical decision support tools or CDS tools that essentially fire a trigger to say, oh, you may not want to do this with this patient at this time. So they are rules or algorithms, but sometimes those can be driven by AI and machine learning. And so we don't always know what's triggering that algorithm. And then sometimes it's fairly clear for us. So for example, we had a nurse that was working on a doctoral degree and took on a project of what does a case manager know when the patient admits to the front door of a hospital that might predict a 30-day readmission after discharge? So when the patient hits that door, what might we know as a nurse case manager that might predict the future? So algorithms can be used, either statistical algorithms can be used to predict whether that patient would readmit. AI and machine learning can be used in order to predict that kind of thing. And then can give that nurse a trigger of high alert, this patient's going to need much more case management type services to prevent that readmission. So that's one simple example of how algorithms have been used. And that was by a very smart nurse by the name of Dr. Adonica Duggar that I actually had the opportunity to work with that created that algorithm.
Okay. And I think you were planning to give us a case scenario about some of this.
So another scenario that actually is a true story of a nurse that reported having worked in the emergency room. And so names are replaced here to protect the innocent and institutions. But Nancy Nurse is an experienced nurse, well-respected in her institution, and a patient, let's say around 74, 75 years of age, presents. And this patient has all the symptomatology of an infection that we often see with sepsis. So a very severe infection that can be life-threatening and you develop what's called sepsis. So you often see what we call hypoxemia with oxygen saturations of 88, where you'd like to see it well above in the high 90s. And that the patient's put on oxygen. The patient has tachycardia and respiratory rate increases. And so all of the symptoms that patient is experiencing trigger a sepsis alert like I was describing before. So that clinical decision support alert. And we immediately, one of the things that we do is give fluids. And so if what Nancy Nurse sees is that the history of the electronic medical record actually says, well, this patient has also had heart failure. And so with heart failure, we often see a lot of fluid in the chest also, and a lot of the same symptoms that we may see. And so what, long and short of this whole thing is this patient did not have sepsis. They had heart failure. And so had that clinician and the physicians that were attending at the time gone down the road of that sepsis protocol like the electronic health record algorithms were telling him to do or her to do, it would have been the wrong thing to do. And so it's important that we stop and question these types of alerts, particularly this one was fairly straightforward where we could see fairly clearly why these alerts were being triggered. But many times we don't know, and it's more of a black box type phenomenon where we don't know what's behind that box and what's triggering that algorithm.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to talk more about that black box phenomenon. Sounds really interesting. I was trying to look online to figure out why it's called that. So you can let me know if I'm in the right neighborhood. So it seems the term black box is used because it's like looking at a black box. You don't know what's in the box, as you mentioned. So like a computer, we can enter data, but sometimes we don't understand how it's coming up or the technology is coming up with the information that it's giving us back. So especially with complicated AI technologies, I guess we can input data, but the average person doesn't understand how the reasoning why it's coming up with the info it gives us. How's that sound?
That is exactly correct.
So,
yes, absolutely. And one of the things that we're seeing is there is a big push for ethical and unbiased use of AI and machine learning. And so this is one of the rules around ethical use of algorithms is that there is transparency and that we should be able to understand what's behind that black box. And many times the patterns that when it's really truly big data, large volumes of data, you don't always know what some of these AI networks, one of them particularly is called a neural network, where it is trying to replicate the way the brain actually thinks. And it's very complex in terms of how it detects patterns within in the data. And so those are the ones that are the types of algorithms that are generated that are sometimes most difficult to know what's going on behind those types of algorithms.
Okay, well said.
When we actually put AI and machine learning together, we often call it deep learning networks. They get very, very powerful. And what we're seeing now is not only these deep learning networks, and an example of that is like we discussed earlier, those cars, those automatic cars that Tesla is run with deep learning type networks. They're developed, that type of technology is part of the development of that type of smart car. So nurses are beginning to see service robots and all kinds of robotics coupled with AI and machine learning. So not only do we have these deep learning networks, but we also are beginning to see robotics put on top of these types of technologies. And so it gets particularly interesting when some of these robots can even detect emotion. Smiling, crying, anger, facial recognition methods that can predict emotion and respond accordingly. So some of these robots are getting kind of almost creepy real in appearance and even their responses. Mm-hmm. And so we see funny commercials that you hear where you can't really tell if you're talking to a chat box or a real person.
Oh my, right.
They get funny sometimes. So technologies in clinical life, though, get a little more serious. And so we've seen some really interesting things. The American Nursing Association commissioned a white paper because we're beginning to see these service robots, and we need to think in terms of how are they going to impact nursing and what does it mean to nursing practice. And so my colleague, Dr. Mary Teets, and myself had the opportunity to go into several hospitals that were piloting a service robot by the name of Moxie, created by some very smart young academician scientists. Part of what we discovered was that, first of all, nurses liked Moxie. It made them happy. It was fun to have Moxie on the unit. And Moxie had these blinking heart eyes that would respond to the nurses as they're going down the hall. So a little de-stressor there.
Oh my.
And on the other hand, Moxie, they would turn a corner and they'd be running into Moxie, you know, rushing around doing their clinical activity. So you have to think in terms of clinical workflow around service robotics like that. This, but they also told really interesting stories about patients connecting with the robots and it de-stressing those patients prior to surgery, for example. And one of the nurses told a story about a patient that asked if Moxie could come into the room. And we have to think about infection control and things like that. So it was special circumstances that they allowed Moxie to come into the room. And the patient literally put her forehead on Moxie's, the robot's forehead, and just sat there for several seconds, and it calmed her down before surgery, which was a very wow. unexpected thing. So really interesting things. But how does Moxie run? Well, AI, machine learning, and Moxie is getting, they were in pilot stages then, so they were learning a lot. And the actual company technicians would be behind Moxie and actually helping to drive Moxie because Moxie was learning. And mm-hmm. so the machine's getting smarter and smarter. And now if you see Moxie out in the field, you're not seeing the human being behind them because the machine learning has helped Moxie get that much smarter in what Moxie is doing to support nurses on the unit.
That's fascinating. Wow. That's really interesting. So that's really cool. I mean, that sounds like we have a lot of advantages there to be able to continue to use technologies like that. I wanted to ask you a fun question because there's always the other side, particularly in, let's say, movies and the media, where they make it look like artificial intelligence is going to take over the world and overpower humans. So do you think that's all sensationalized nonsense? Or are there certain concepts that are worth thinking about that, you know, we should take a little more seriously?
Well, I think some of them are fun to think about. You know, what comes to mind is the American sci-fi romantic drama of Her, where, that's a funny one and fun to watch. And, where he falls in love with this his artificially intelligent virtual assistant. So that one's kind of fun. If you haven't seen that movie, I'd strongly recommend it because it's a fun one. But, you know, I have a colleague that is actually quoted in the American Nursing Association white paper on robotics and nursing, and Dr. Richard Booth, a Canadian colleague who's done quite a bit of work in research with robotics and nursing and how we need to begin to think about how we're going to prepare our young nurses to respond to robotics and AI and machine learning perhaps better than we're doing now, because it is not just on the horizon, it is here in the clinical setting now. And so he gets very provocative and kind of fun with the way he teaches students many, many times. But he talks about a scenario where in a home health situation, you have a patient with dementia or not quite the cognitive ability, and he is challenged because he fails to take his medication, and the robot dispenses the medication. And so the robot knows whether or not that medication has been dispensed and taken, and clearly it has not. And so your scenario, nursing student, is that the patient says, well, that robot's lying. I took that medication. And so, you know, it is kind of funny to contemplate. And then, but seriously, that's a scenario that could really happen. And so How do you respond to a patient in that scenario where your robot is actually an actor within the patient care? And so Dr. Booth uses a theory called actor network theory, where machines can actually be an actor in the clinical process. So when I first heard Richard talk about that, because it was underlying his dissertation when he got his PhD, I had a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that technology could be an actor. But when you consider an actor is a robot, it's not hard to contemplate at all. That is what that white paper is all about. The American Nursing Association saying, we need to figure out how to begin to deal with this, because there are also serious considerations such as delegation. When should a nurse delegate under his or her license to a robot some thing that we do for patients? Is it okay to give medications? Is it okay to dispense medications as the scenario in home health? Or would we not want to delegate that responsibility to a machine?
Good points, good concepts. Technology as an actor is a statement I'm going to be thinking about that sticks with you. Wow, already it is time to almost conclude episode one. So let me just check in with Kirk and see if there's anything he'd like to say from the things you've been talking about.
Well, I think that your comment about the technology as an actor, I think I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's what we're seeing in just my limited bit of when it comes to diabetes and insulin pumps, is that it is playing a significant role in decision-making process that we're not really aware of. And on top of it, we have a role to play as well, which we're not really embracing, mostly because we don't really understand how the AI is coming into the medical field. So just thinking about that, you know, very important to me that we have to be more than just looking at some data and thinking, oh, that's great data, but rather there's an active player behind that data that we need to be aware of or interact with, which from my experience, I haven't been doing it because it's so new. You're just really not aware of that interaction or technology as an actor.
Nicely put. Well, there you go. That's our conclusion. So thank you both. We have a lot more to talk about, so let's definitely continue this conversation in episode 2. Please return for episode 2 as we continue discussing the role of artificial intelligence and informatics in healthcare. Kirk is going to tell us about some clinical experiences with AI and algorithm-involved technology around insulin pumps, as you just noted. A sincere thank you to our subject matter experts for joining today, Dr. McBride and Kirk Ornstein. This is Maria Morales for Colibri Healthcare.
This podcast featured content from an accredited CE activity provided by Colibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits. Take your learning to the next level by subscribing to more podcasts on compelling healthcare topics.